there, but.
This one says existing dwelling.
I think he also proposed.
Yes, the existing dwelling does exist.
Can we clarify as well the, I'm getting confused on the dwelling unit. I think I read somewhere that talked about dwelling unit, should it be differentiated dwelling unit in a separate building? Because the dwelling units that are noted as examples in the definitions are all within one unit, within one building. Is there any way of differentiating that this is a dwelling unit in a separate or an accessory building?
The McDonald's official plan was amended to allow them in either the single family detached dwelling or an accessory building on the lot. And that was approved by the ministry back, Ministry of Municipal Affairs back in 2016, I believe, when the secondary policy came up by the province of Ontario. It was a ministry's modification, like our official plan.
If we were going to defer this, what additional information would you like to see?
To be honest with you, I really want to know what the variance is from to bylaw 95-12, whether it's just a gross floor area variance, or whether it's the addition of another dwelling unit as a variance. Because the new bylaw, 2019-23, has the same problem that I see. The report speaks to, for example, I think Mr. Jackson just is isolating this down to be one variance, and in my discussion with the chief building official, he thinks it's a floor area variance. So
we need some clarification. So I'm hearing that there's a consensus to defer it until we get more information.
On page 21 of zoning bylaw 2019-23, which is supposed to be, there's a reference to section 3.31.2, secondary dwelling units. But that whole section is not the same as the council approved bylaw. It says that, for example, it says a secondary dwelling unit is permitted in the RU zone or the RRR zone subject to a maximum of one secondary dwelling unit per lot. Confirmation that the septic system has capacity, which we don't have. So the total floor area of the secondary dwelling must not exceed the total floor area of principal dwelling on a lot. So I think that's where you come into an issue with respect to the size of the garage plus the dwelling unit may exceed the size of the existing house.
Plus the capacity. Yes, Mr. Burns?
There may be a reason for that, Mr. Davidson, because there's no such a zoning bylaw, I don't think, anyway. 2019-3.
It's missing 2-3.
Can I suggest that committee member Davidson send Ina email or whatever what he thinks is required for the applicant to submit for the variance to come back again?
If I could suggest, if I could get the proposed plan from the chief building official, it would help me tremendously. Because, as we all know, the accessory building is supposed to be behind the main front wall of the principal building on the lot, except where the setbacks are met. And I really don't have that sketch that's been provided. Doesn't really give me that much comfort in saying that the setbacks are met. I'm assuming they are, but
further to that now, Mr. Davidson's mentioned the chief building official a number of times. Is that person not maybe a commenting agency? Should we be referring to the chief building official? He seems to have more information than we have making the decision on buildings and lots. It sounds like he doesn't comment unless you call him, and I'm not sure if that's the proper
procedure. I was just under the assumption that someone told this applicant to go to the Committee of Adjustment, someone internal to McKellar, and that should have been, perhaps, the chief building official, who is the administrator of the zoning law. And he would have looked at the plan and said, no, you need a minor variance for X, Y, and Z. Is that not how it would work in McKellar?
Yes.
But just yes. As a further step, we're sitting here as the Committee of Adjustment, can we not reference what the chief building official knows? We don't seem to have any report from him, or is that a separate issue?
I would suggest that whenever we have any committee member has an issue like this, we ask the chief building official to come to the meeting. That would be the easiest result to me, and you'd be prepared for it.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Or they could provide a memorandum to the committee with a zoning opinion that would outline the variances. But see, the other thing I don't know is whether or not there's a height variance required here, because the accessory buildings are limited to a height of, I think, 5 or 6 meters. And the dwelling on top of this garage, if it's a big garage in terms of vehicles to go in it, it may exceed the height limit as well.
Okay, so just to follow up, some reason you can add if you wish it. Mr. Davidson, going to send the clerk the issues. We're going to get information from our CBO about variations, etc., and we're going to defer this until we get that information.
I'll get that to you as quickly as possible. I don't want to hold these people up from moving forward, but I'll get it to you as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Could I just ask, I think you mentioned earlier some questions about the septic as well?
Yes.
Obviously we need to address that, and again,
We don't know whether this has its own water supply, or it's a shared water supply, whether the septic system is being shared, because we have to know the number of bedrooms the septic system is accommodating for the size of the septic. But I also see on the plans here that there's a privy. So I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't show it that I know of anyhow. So.
Well, there's an existing in the outhouse.
Yeah, well, that might be the septic system out of you.
As close to the well.
I find it interesting how close the well is to that, too, but anyway, that's another issue.
All right, we will get that information, so we're going to have a roll call on the resolution to defer.
Okay. So the resolution to defer that on DeLuca, so calling Peter Hopkins.
Yes.
Marlon Costa.
Yes.
Mike Heckman.
Yes.
Reg Moore.
Yes.
Nick Ryland.
Yes.
Ted Davidson.
Yes.
David Moore.
Yes.
It is the first.
Okay. We have resolution 2206 that the Committee of Adjustment does now adjourn.
You got one.
Peter Hopkins.
Yes.
Marlene Hoskam.
Yes.
Mike Heckman.
Yes.
Reg Moore.
Yes.
Nick Ryland.
Yes.
Ted Davidson.
Yes.
David Moore.
Yes.
We have a mover and second.
Okay. Did I hear a mover and second?
Yeah.
Did we?
No, we didn't have a mover and
second. I shall.
We all moved. I missed you. Second.
All right.
Guess I'm
here. First, Just before we go, are we going to be able to digitally sign these decisions?
That will be a merely question. I know that we're going to have our new website up and running, hopefully within days. And we might have that possibility on that. I'll have to check on that.
I mean, if I get the decision, I can either buy a signature and send it back.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Dave.
And I don't. So, is it your pleasure here? Should we sign them now for you?
No,
because
the one that needs to be signed, I have to rewrite the information that Ted gave me.
Oh, great.
Right? And the other one's deferred, so we just need to initial tonight.
How are we doing, Ryan?
You can keep going if you'd like.
We can go right in. Okay. Thank you. We're going to call the council meeting to order. We'd like to begin by acknowledging that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Mississauga people. And we'll now do a roll call, starting with the council on my left.
Councilor Nick Ryland.
Councilor Regmore.
Mary Smith.
Councilor Mike Hakkinen.
Councilor Morley Haskell.
Ida Watkinson, clerk.
Treasurer Ocean County.
Mayor Peter Hopkins. Thank you. Are there any declarations of conflict of interest? Hearing none. We have three deputations, one from the Rotary Club, one from our food recycler, and one from the McKellar Library and their report. So, oh, after the agenda. Resolution 2244, be resolved that the Council of Township of McKellar is hereby approved the agenda for this meeting as presented. Have a mover and a second. Any discussion? Yeah.
The number and the number 6, is that supposed to be 6.1, 6.2, 6.3?
Yes.
Okay, correction. Anything else? Okay, call the question, all in favor. Here. Okay, just for the three delegations, you have 10 minutes to wow us and with your presentations and then any documentation that you want to leave with us. Some of you have that as well. So without any particular order, we're going to ask for David Brunton from the Rotary Club of Perry Sound to give us his presentation. David, if you're there.
I am here, Mayor Hopkins. Thank you very much. I do have a PowerPoint presentation for your entertainment this evening. If I may share my screen.
Working on it.
Yep. I've made you the host.
Okay, thank you. Can you see my screen?
Not yet.
Hey, super. Okay, thank you. And with me tonight is our reigning president, Phil Youngs, and another member, board member of our board committee for the Three Pitch Chair Award. And I'd like to just ask Phil if he would take care of the introduction.
Thank you. Mayor Hopkins, councilors, staff members. I'm Phil Youngs, president of the Rotary Club, Perry Sound, and today's the vice president and chair of the Three Pitch Sport Committee, that's David Brunton, and also a former president and a key board committee member, Cheryl Ward, and we represent our 38 area members. We wish to thank you for your past support and for allowing us to present you this sponsorship opportunities available in support of our second annual three-pitch fundraising tournament. This was formerly known as the Reach for many years, and is in support of cancer care at our West Perry Sound Health Center and the Rotary Club of Perry Sound in general for many, many beneficiaries. we're hoping to raise $70,000 this year, and I'd like to ask Mike back to meet it.
Well, thank you very much, President Bill. Here's just a little brief summary of our first event, which was seen so long ago in 2019 until things along with everything else got shut down. As you see here, here's a photo of the opening ceremonies. People lined up on the back, on the other side of the boards, waiting for their pickerel fish dinner.
Excuse me, Dave. I don't think we're seeing this.
No,
screen.
I'm not seeing it.
We're not seeing the presentation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Let me just try something here. How's that?
Starting.
It's starting to screen share. We aren't seeing anything just yet, but we are. But it's coming up. I think it's just thinking about it right now.
Yeah, it says at the top there you are screen sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing yet.
We have a black screen, and it says here that you're starting to screen share.
Okay. All right. I guess there was a little bit of a hiccup earlier, I think.
There we are.
There we go.
Are we on?
Yeah.
Yep, we're on.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll back up and just show you our base page here. There we are. Okay, I'll swing into full screen. There we are. How's that, everybody? Can you see this okay?
Yeah.
It's okay.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you very much for putting that out here. Because this is a lot better than just hearing my voice, let me tell you. So, and as I say, this is a little flashback. It's 2019, take you way back to 2019. We have wonderful support from the community. And in spite of the weather, never before in 15 years at the Ridge have we ever experienced extreme weather conditions consisting of persistent high winds, monsoon rains. However, it was no match for the overwhelming support of the ball players who rallied on. Some creative people used some illegal ball equipment, I might point out. However, we overlooked that in spite of it all. So.
There was certainly lots of things to do. It's not just a three-pitch tournament. We make it into a great, lot of fun tournament, and as you can see from the pictures there was all kinds of things going on. Everyone had a great time. As David mentioned, despite the weather, which was monsoon rains and a little bit chilly side, the Rotary Club was very fortunate to have so much support in everything, and of course, we were lucky. We had heaters donated by Ace Rentals and Georgia Rentals that helped keep everybody warm and dry. But nobody's spirits were down. They had a great time, and we did too for our first time hosting the event.
And thanks to the generosity of sponsors, to yourself, the ball players, to participated in the community at large. Collectively, we were successful in raising $55,000, which for the locals, as an example. Gerald?
Okay, thanks, Dave. Your screens are a little bit behind. Your internet's breaking up a little bit on us, but we're with you. Everyone's familiar with Rotary. We've been around since the 1930s. Not me personally, but has been around. And we're very, very proud of what we do contribute to the community. So we talk about the RAGE tournament to raise money to support cancer care, but also other programs that we support in the neighborhood. And that last photo you just saw was a picture of the Salvation Army's new community services vehicle, which we collectively together with what we are doing helped raise $55,000 towards that purchase. We get a lot of requests from the local area for residents seeking financial assistance for mobility equipment as aborted devices, right through to purchasing large pieces of equipment for screening for procedures, whatever. We are here, and our job is to raise money to help our community and make it a better place. And it's something that we're extraordinarily proud of what we do. I think I'm on the next slide, Gabe. An annual project, which you might be familiar with, and that what's important to remember is that none of this happens with just the 38 Rotarians. It is dependent on the community, and we're so fortunate to have the 7 municipalities and the involvement of all the councils and all of the community constituents to help us execute on the programs, such as the one you see there, where every year for the last many years, we've been able to create up to or over 100 Christmas hampers to put food on tables for people at Christmas. It's a project that we're proud of. We work closely with the Salvation Army, and it's one of those community projects that are really needed, and with the help of other volunteers in the community and the generosity of the donations, we're able to make it all happen.
And with the support of all, we collectively were proud to have donated $20,000 directly to the cancer care program at our West Parrystown Health Center, which was great financial assistance in the purchase of a cover slipper biopsy preserving machine in the lab at the health center, which basically preserves an original biopsy for many years, 25 to 30 years, and so that the physician can compare the previous biopsy with the current biopsy, a very, very important piece of equipment. And this year, working in directly with the board of the hospital, they've asked if we could support them in obtaining a new chemotherapy medicine preserver. Theirs is not functioning properly at all, and it's a dire need of replacement. It's vital in the storage of chemotherapy drugs until they can be administered to the patient. So this is our goal for this year. And they're very supportive. The foundation, at the hospital, the board is very supportive of our efforts and supports us in very many different ways. And the funds go directly to the areas which have been identified, which is really appreciative of their support.
So like so many other activities, our event has been postponed for 2 years due to COVID-19. In early 2020, COVID shut down most of the world, but not our local Rotary Club. In fact, we are busier than ever creating and implementing the grocery program. The slide's up there. I'm sure, again, everyone's familiar with it, and it's another one of those fantastic solutions that was built and was executed by so many members and volunteers throughout the community. I think we had over 100 additional volunteers coming in, helping to grocery shop and get the food out to the people at risk, vulnerable people, or just simply people that didn't feel comfortable coming out. That program is still running today, and as we went through the last fourth wave, again, it became critical to get to keep people safe and to help where we could. Let's hope that we come out of this by June, so we'll be able to do our best.
So we have, to help you in deciding or give you some suggestions on how Township and Keller can be supportive of the program, the event, we've created some sponsorship opportunities as the rallying does continue on. And if you, we invite you to visit theragefund.com, which summarizes the history of the event for the previous 15 years and how it originated and how gives you a sense of feeling and how the community and so many people come together and look forward to this event on an annual basis pardon me, when we had to cancel the last minute in 2020, we had 20 teams that signed up, and every team that we contacted were really very disappointed, obviously, but also they left their registration fees in trust with us and committed to coming back this year. So we're off to a wonderful start, and registration opens up Monday morning at 9 a.m. And we have our own website now, which again too was partly supported the first year by the hospital foundation. And if you just go Google Rotary Paris Sound, it'll take you right there. There's all the information that you'd like to know about the event, and also be able to register a team by a Valentine's Day is coming up. You can buy your honey and yourself a fish dinner ticket, or even donate an item or a bit of an item and sign an auction. So we want to thank you very, very much for your time that you've allowed us to this evening present to you, and we'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have that might come to mind.
Let me just start from McKellar's point of view that quite aware of all the excellent work that the Rotary does, particularly giving back to the community. They give all sorts of money back to many, many different things. McKellar has supported you, particularly with the food thing during COVID-19, and respect all the hard work that went into that in feeding families in all municipalities in the area. It's very well respected. And what some of you don't know is they have a world project that they're trying to stamp out polio around the world, and they've done all sorts of excursions to many countries dealing with that. So just on behalf of our council, just thank you for all that you do. And I've been to their event and certainly had their dinner and gone through their aspects of their fundraising, and they're excellent. So we will look at it and we will get back to you, but it's an excellent organization. And I know how hard they all work. I know quite a few of the members. Anybody else have any questions for Cheryl and Dave?
David, if you could just make me the host again when you're ready. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your presentation. It's much appreciated.
Thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have a resolution 2245. Be resolved that the Council of Township of Calvert here I received a deputation from Dave Brentley, Chairwoman of the Rotary Club of Paris Sound. I have a mover and a seconder, please. Okay, so we have resolution 22-45. Be resolved that the Council of Township of Calvert here I received a deputation from Dave Brentley, Chairwoman of the Rotary Club of Paris Sound. I have a mover and a seconder, please. Councillor Haskin, second. Councillor Moore, any discussion? Call the question. All in favor? Carried. So our second deputation is from Amy Gagnier, who's the project coordinator from the Municipal Solutions. She's given us a very detailed document, and you have 10 minutes to summarize it and wow it. And just for your information, I alerted our Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee, who has been looking at this issue, to see if they're going to zoom in and listen to what you have to say. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Amy, and you're on the floor.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. I would like to share my screen, and I promise not to end the meeting as a host. So if I can receive that permission, please.
Yes.
That would be great.
Give me 1 second here, Amy.
No problem. Thank you. please get a confirmation that you just see the slides now?
Yes.
Wonderful, thank you. So good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you for having me today. My name is Annie Garnier. I'm the Project Coordinator for Municipal Solutions. I'm here on behalf of Food Cycle Sciences Municipal Solutions team, and I'd like to do a presentation of approximately 10 minutes, leaving a couple of minutes at the end for some questions. Just to start off, just a short overview of who we are. Food Cycle Science is a Canadian company that is 100% focused on food waste diversion solutions using our innovative technology called Food Cycler. So our in-home food recycler is sold direct to consumers through partners like Vitamix and Breville, and to municipalities through Food Cycler Municipal Solutions Program. Our municipal solutions help mainly small, rural, remote, and northern communities where curbside green bin collection is challenging to implement, or where landfill space is limited and waste extends lifespans are being considered. As of today, we have over 33 Canadian municipalities across 7 provinces and territories who have signed up on the Food Cycler program. Some examples nearby are Town of Parry Sound, Village of Burke's Falls, Seguin Township, and the Township of Armour. Canada has identified food waste as a critical issue, and wasted food has environmental, economic, and social consequences. Current food waste management requires resources to manage its disposal and diversion, which is passed on to municipal utilities and services. Now, the problem with food waste is that it is avoidable, and it accounts for almost half of our household waste, and it's made up of mostly liquid, which I'm sure we're all aware of our Canadian weather. It's very heavy and freezes in the winter, making it difficult to process and transport. If over 15% of food waste piling up in our landfill is avoidable, then why aren't we doing anything about it? Reduction of food waste at the residential can support the municipality in their environmental goals, reduce household carbon footprint, and extend the lifespan of your community's local landfill. One of the impacts to municipality is that since food waste makes up such a large portion of our waste stream, it's in our landfills tend to fill up very quickly. Additionally, high volumes of waste going through our many waste depots are a major cost to municipalities and ultimately to taxpayers. Wasted food that ends up in the garbage and ultimately in the landfill produces a methane, which is a greenhouse gas that is 21 times more potent than carbon dioxide and a major contributor to climate change. And in our communities, putting food waste in the garbage causes some interesting odors, which can attract unwanted visitors such as bears, raccoons, and other pests. Removing food waste from the garbage eliminates these issues and reduces volume. For the municipality, this will save on operation and transfer costs and save spaces in your region's landfills. For residents, less waste and no smell is much more easier and pleasant to manage, and fewer trips to the waste sites are required. So working here, we often get asked, haven't we solved this already? There are curbside green bins, which millions of Canadians are accustomed to having, but they are mostly available in big cities where with high population density and an investment in infrastructure. However, this solution can be cost prohibitive and operationally challenging in northern rural areas, and participation rates are much lower than what we hope to see. Many people in your community might also backyard compost, and we think it's a great solution. However, many people may not have the space, the ability, or desire to do this at home, and there's still the concern about odors and animals. And then finally, the easiest solution is to continue to landfill your organic waste, but the long-term impacts are costly and harmful to the environment. At Food Cycler, we proposed a different way to deal with food waste, which really focuses on making food waste very easy to deal with and right in our homes. Essentially, we built a small kitchen appliance about the size of a bread machine, where you put in your food waste, and that can include meat, poultry, fish, dairy, and even some oats. You push a button, and in a matter of hours, you have a dry, sterile, pathogen-free, odorless, and nutrient-rich soil amendment that comes out. The machine can be used anywhere with a plug, and most people store it in their kitchen basement, or perhaps even a heated garage. And so the food cycler will process, on average, 1 kilogram of food waste per cycle. Each cycle takes between 48 hours to complete and uses less than 1 kilowatt hour of power, so a couple of cents per cycle. The result is about 100 grams of dry, sterile, and odorless soil amendment that can be then used in gardening or landscaping application, be put into your composting system, or even given to a local farm. It can even be processed with any existing leaf and yard waste systems you may already have in place. From an environmental standpoint, the food cycler is comparable to backyard and central composting, without taking into account transportation emissions, of course. It represents an approximate reduction of greenhouse gas impact by about 95% versus sending waste to landfill. Sorry, are you still hearing me okay?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, great. Sorry, it looked like there was some freeze there. In terms of economic impact, our solution offers a return on investment by significantly reducing your waste management costs. So with traditional waste services, we generate waste, put it in a bin or a receptacle, a hauling truck comes and pick it up, and it may go through a transfer station to ultimately be buried in a landfill. With the food cycler, you have a resident generating their waste and processing right at home without the need to run trucks or new facilities to build. In the short term, you have less disposal and lower operating costs, and in the long term, you will get many more years out of our existing landfills, and our communities can achieve higher diversion without implementing any costly curbside programs. One thing we've learned from working with municipalities is that residents are very interested in being part of the solution. So they want to try new things and they want options. With the food cycler, you get to bring something innovative and tangible to your residents, and they don't need to live in a big city to be able to divert their organics. We believe food waste diversion should be available to all Canadians, all year round, no matter where you live. And on top of the social pressure is the impact of the regulations that are coming to us here in Ontario. There are a number of diversion targets that I'm sure you're all aware of coming into effect in the next couple of years, so it's important to have a plan in place that meets these goals and works for your community. The Waste Free Ontario Act, Resource Recovery and Circular Economy Act, coupled with Made in Ontario Environmental Plan, lays out Ontario's vision for a circular economy and a goal of a zero waste Ontario with zero greenhouse gas emissions from the waste sector. With the food cycler, we're reducing food waste at the source, and since food waste accounts for such a large portion of household waste, it is the most impactful strategy of achieving these diversion targets. As I mentioned earlier, we're working with several municipalities across Canada. We have completed pilots in over 1,200 households across 14 municipalities, and the results are overwhelmingly positive. We have very high levels of participation. We achieved a significant amount of net new diversion, and over 90% of people say they will recommend the solution. In the city of Nelson, in BC, their council voted to put a food cycler in every home in their city of 10,000 people following the success of their pilots. The pilot program is typically a 12-week project. Residents purchase a food cycler at a subsidized rate from their municipality. They use a unit, track the number of cycles per week, and at the end, the residents get to keep the food cycler, of course, and we ask them to complete a brief survey so we can evaluate the program. The results of the survey are put into a final report for council and the committee, which is effectively a feasibility study that can be used to support future waste management solutions. The Green Municipal Fund, or FCM, is a potential source of funding, and the good news is that the food cycler solution meets GMF's criteria and high-performance environmental targets. So we are very open to supporting an application for funding to extend the program as well. Here's an overview of how the pilot program are laid out, including our pilot size recommendation. For a municipality of your size, we recommend a pilot of 50 households. The funded pilot is based on a subsidy model where Food Cycle Science provides a discount, and then we ask the municipality to subsidize the cost by $125 per unit plus shipping. So the residents only ends up paying $175 for a $500 machine. We are also introducing a new bundle package that includes not just the food cycler, but enough spare filters to last the average user an entire year. In this bundle, the municipal contribution remains the same, but the residents will benefit from getting $60 worth of filters for only $25 more. So this bundle is created based on feedback from our past pilot programs, where residents expressed that they value being able to buy discounted filters conveniently and locally rather than online at full price. And lastly, we realize that asking residents to pay $175 or $200 depending will be appealing to many but not affordable for everyone. I mentioned earlier that we strongly believe that food waste diversion solutions should be available to all Canadians. And to show that we are serious, you'll have the option to top up your order by 10% more units for only $175 each, which we would ask you to make available to members of your community for only $50. This is intended for low-income households, community or nonprofit organization, community housing, or anyone who can genuinely benefit an affordable option. So this is entirely optional, and how you manage it will be at your discretion, since you know your community best. So thank you very much. We will welcome the Township of McKellar to be a part of this initiative, as we believe your community is a great fit for the benefits of this program. Tonight, we kindly ask you to receive our presentation, and if there is interest in a pilot program, to refer it to staff for a report and recommendation. So once again, thank you very much, and I am prepared to answer any questions you may have at this time.
That was good. 9.5 minutes, Amy. You did well.
Thank you. Very close.
So we have 30 seconds to recycle your questions. Any questions from members of council? Mr. Moore?
I was just wondering, the units themselves, how long do they last? Is there a warranty on them? And what about service? Who services them if they need fixed or anything?
Yes, thank you for your question. The food cycler's average lifespan is estimated to be at least 6 to 7 years. It followed all instructions. We offer a 1-year standard of manufacturer's warranty, starting on the date of delivery of all food cycler units to our municipal partners. And all of that repair or replacement is done by Food Cycler. So we have a customer service specialist who will take care of all of that.
Any other question? Councillor Tedman?
So I think one of the components that the Food Cycler has compared to, I know what people have mentioned, blender composting, is that the Food Cycler has, sort of a heat treatment of the material as well to ensure that pathogens and any of those harmful bacteria would be destroyed so that you end up with a sterile humus material afterwards. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we are quite different from a blender composter. So we have a heating application that runs for several hours, as well as a grinding function to heat and sterilize and completely grind the food waste. So what comes out of it, it is a sterile pathogen-free soil amendment. It's also odorless. It kind of looks like dehydrated food waste / soil. We did a third-party verification on our byproduct to support those claims. So it is pathogen-free, free from bacteria, weed seeds, and foodborne pathogens. They're all eliminated in the process.
Thank you. I support this initiative, and I think that in some of the material I read, you have larger units available for use at waste disposal sites as well. I'm just wondering if is that you deal with those units as well? Is that correct? Or
yes, we do have commercial units available, but not for pilot projects. We're also having a newer model launching very soon. It is 2022, and it would have a 5-liter capacity instead of a 2.5-liter capacity. So we're waiting on our launch for a newer model, which should be available mid or end of the year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Anyway, thank you very much, Amy, for your informative presentation.
Amy, appreciate it.
Make sure you get us back in the right track.
And can you make me host again?
Yes, absolutely. Just one moment.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Resolution 2246. Be resolved that the Council of Township of McKellar hereby receive the deputation from Amy Gagne on the Food Cycler Municipal Solution Program for information. We have a mover and seconder. Councilor Pickman? Seconder? Councilor Ryan? All in favor?
Any discussion?
Yep, you can have discussion. Yeah. I think you need it.
Yeah. Yes, certainly very. Feel this is a very good project for our municipality, and I would like to see whatever it takes to get this moving forward. If we need to do a survey to determine how many units that we would, if we would just start off with the 50 as a good sort of number, but if we felt that we needed to have some type of